Welcome to the Aftershock Central podcast with Martin and Travis. Hello, Travis.
Hey, buddy.
What's up?
I'm chilling, dude.
Yeah, me too.
Drinking a Three Weavers beer and, ready to talk some Aftershock comics.
That's fantastic. I'm drinking some Krispy Kreme coffee.
Krispy Kreme?
Yeah. Well, not like actual from Krispy Kreme. My wife bought Krispy Kreme K-Cups.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So that's what I'm drinking. We're not here to discuss coffee, however. This is an Aftershock podcast, so let's talk about some Aftershock books. Ronnie is not here today. He is he's on assignment. I don't even know. Why do we do that? We should just quit doing that. I don't even know. I'm not witty enough to come up with new things every time. Well, I am. I just don't want to.
I liked it.
Yeah?
Yo, but yeah. Yeah. Okay, but Ronnie, though, were he here, would probably be telling us about his time at a con this last weekend, right?
That's right. He went to Planet Comic Con. Except he's not here, so
he
can't
tell us
about it.
And he was, like, hanging out with Cullen
Bunn. And what else is new? He's always hanging out with Cullen Bunn.
Yeah, no, that's just news for Ronnie. We don't have Aftershock news, but that's Ronnie news.
That's right. However, there was news. The news was that even though Aftershock was not there, Ronnie was there. And so Aftershock said, if you need to talk to somebody about Aftershock, find Ronnie. I mean, they said find the Aftershock Central podcast. But really, it was only Ronnie there because we were not in Missouri.
Yeah. Was he wearing the shirt? Is that how people could find him?
I mean, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know. Like, you know, people don't know what we look like.
Anyways, Ronnie can tell us all about Planet Comic Con next time. This time, we're going to talk about some books, and before we do so, we're going to go right into that. We're going to talk about one of last week's books that we totally forgot was coming out until we started recording, and that is Beyonders, issue number 5, written by Paul Jenkins with art by Wesley Sinclair, letters by Marshall Dillon, and let's talk about this. There's a couple of cool revelations, I would say. I think overall there wasn't like a whole lot new, right? Like we don't really learn more about the Beyonders mystery or what it is that they're protecting or fighting over or looking for. But we do get to see a particular character that we've seen before. We learn who he is, both in name and in relation to another character in the story.
Yeah, I mean, are we being coy about this? Like,
No, I mean, we can spoil it, right? Like, I mean, like, go read your books, bro.
Yeah, spoiler pause. Okay. I can't do it like Chris.
No.
Okay, so, the villain of the series, the dude who's been killing everybody, turns out he's the main dude's dad.
Yes. And he is also, did you catch that?
What's that?
He's Christopher Columbus.
What? Okay, yes. He's Christopher Columbus?
Yes, he's Christopher Columbus.
Okay.
Is that not what you got? That's the way I read it.
I mean, I definitely, like, you know, I obviously it's a map for Christopher Columbus, right?
Yes.
Like, I just because he's in possession of it, that doesn't necessarily mean it's his, right?
But you see how old he is.
Yeah, I mean, so how's that work, though? Like, That'd make him 500 years old?
Yeah.
At least?
Yeah. So? Maybe he found the Holy Grail or the Fountain of Youth or whatever. Maybe,
yeah, I mean, I didn't catch that, but, you know, if you got that, that's pretty cool.
I mean, I could be wrong. If you read this book and you think otherwise, let me know. But I read it as he's Christopher Columbus.
Okay. Yeah, I guess one thing that I would say to your earlier point is just that, like, we don't really get a lot of answers in this issue beyond, like, that big reveal. And, like, yeah, we don't really know how all of this is happening. And the thing ends with a, like, the end question mark, you know? So does that mean that the continuation is in doubt?
Yeah, that's a good question. I enjoy this book a lot, and I enjoy this issue a lot. But it was a little disappointing to see that ending, right? I don't think anything's been discussed about what the future of this book is. And obviously, like, if a book sells, they'll do more. If it doesn't, they don't do more, right? Like, that's common sense. But I would have wanted to see something a little more decisive in the end, right? Like, you can still leave it open for a chapter two, but find some kind of conclusion to the story, right? And there was no real conclusion here. So because of that, my assumption is that there will be a volume two. But again, I don't know. I hadn't heard anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like the other things that say, like, end volume one or two or, you know, whatever, you know? Yeah. Like, or, like, so-and-so will return. So I just don't know about, like, the idea of this being the ending of the story, you know? It seems like I don't know, it's not finished.
Mm-hmm.
In every sense.
Yeah.
So that's a little, I don't know, that's like slightly disappointing to, like, we still have so little idea what is happening, you know? Like, the big reveal now otherwise is, like, that they now have a map of, like, North America.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, that would be volume two if it comes back. But, you know, I don't know what to expect from that.
Yes. Yeah, no, I agree wholeheartedly. I would like to see something a little more conclusive, just in case that there's not a volume two, especially with all the revelations, right? Like, there was a lot that was revealed here, and a lot that sets up for future stories. So I do hope that this book is doing well enough where there will be a second volume, because otherwise, I'm going to have to go find Paul Jenkins and try to get the story out of him.
It's fan fiction.
There you go. I'll fanfic it. Yeah, yeah. It was, it's fine. I mean, I don't want to let that influence my score, though. You know what I mean? I don't know if I can, but I don't want to.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So, I mean, you want to, like, dig into one or two other things about, like, what actually is in this,
sure.
Like, separated from. Okay. So, like, I guess I'm wondering about two things. And, you know, one is, I don't know, would you agree that, you know, the villain, Christopher, maybe, does he seem like he's been changed kind of by virtue of him interacting with what appears to be, like, you know, blood from the chateau or whatever?
Possibly, except with the revelation that we have that I can't remember the main character's name, but that he's his dad. I wonder if he just was kind of playing a character all along. You know what I mean? Because, like, obviously, even though he's hunting this kid, he's not actually wanting to hurt him if it's actually his kid.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, does the blood change him? Maybe. But, I mean, he's got to be doing something. If he is Christopher Columbus, okay? And I understand that it might be a big if you didn't catch that, so I could be totally wrong. But if he is, then he's got to be taking something that'll make him live for 500 years, okay? So, like, the blood at Rennes-le-Château. Okay, the blood of Christ. That could do it.
Or the Fountain of Youth.
Or the Fountain of Youth. Like, whatever it is, he's already been taking it. So I don't know if it would necessarily change him. I don't know, man. That's a tough question. And there's definitely not any clear indication of an answer because of the way the book ends.
Yeah. It's more kind of speculating, I guess, like, you know, where it would go. But, like, my reading of that was something, like, he drinks it in the last issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like in this issue he says something about, like, seeing the light, and it, you know, it's like starlight or something.
Yeah, yeah, he does. Yep.
So it seems like that's setting up some there's something that plot point is pointing to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Seems like, in my opinion, they're also setting up all kinds of weird stuff about, like, how is this thing in, you know, all this stuff spanning time. Which makes me wonder if there's time travel, you know, that's kind of maybe like one of the other things I felt like they have been pointing to as far as how all of this could be possible with the clues they're finding. I guess the other thing I was wondering about is, you know, they kind of reference there being a mole in the Beyonders,
mm-hmm.
right? What's your read on that? Is it the dog?
I mean, it could be the dog, right? Cause when he sees, Chris over there, he jumps right on him and starts licking his face.
Yeah, I mean, that's my read. Like, I thought that the girl was suspicious. like in earlier issues, but like the dog clearly seems to know him. Yeah. And there's something going on with his eye, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like missing eye.
Yep.
Isn't that like a communications apparatus or something?
Yep.
But that goes to the Beyonders.
Right.
So maybe he just hacked it or something.
Who knows?
Or he's always been a double eight. Both eyes are fake.
He's a double agent.
They put the eye patch on there just like as a, you know, as it's, I don't know. Maybe the Order has better prosthetic dog eye technology.
Maybe. But we don't know, do we?
No. For volume two, let's get into that.
All right, so anyone listening, make sure you are buying this book so that we get a volume two so Travis and I can figure out what the hell's happening. Because I would love to see more of this book. I think we've enjoyed the whole series, all three of us.
Yeah. I mean, I think it has to continue, you know? Like, there's no finality to this. Like, they set up a lot of stuff that's not really... the way the story's been told, it seems like there is a answer or something, you know?
Yeah. Yep, I agree.
Did you look into at all the, like, cryptology thing?
The Dorabella cipher?
There's symbols in the book. There's, like... Right?
Yeah, I had started to. I did for the first couple of issues. But then I just kind of fell off of it. Maybe now that it's wrapped up in a place, I can go back and do that.
Yeah, I want somebody to go and do that. That's not my scene, so I don't know. Like, I wouldn't know where to begin.
I hear you. I don't know where to begin either, but I'm curious to find out. All right, let's rate it up. What's your score, Travis?
Oof. I mean, we've discussed kind of the difficulties of, you know, rating this on its own, you know, like in isolation. I think I will go 3.75 out of 5.
I think I'm right there with you. The fact that I'm unsure about the future of this book, I have to just rate it lower. That's probably not fair, to be honest. Because if I were to rate it solely on the story and the art, I probably would go a 4 out of 5. But man, not knowing is killing me. Somebody please let me know. Yeah, 3.75. I'm with you.
Ronnie's gonna get started on the fan fiction, so it's all good.
That's right. All right, what book do you want
to
read?
And maybe
next?
It'll be sexy. Hey, yeah,
it could be.
Yeah,
it could be. All right, so we have Dead Kings and Oberon. Which would you like to do next?
You want to do Oberon next?
All right, let's do Oberon next. That is Oberon number 3, written by Ryan Parrott, with art by Milos Slavkovic, letters by Charles Pritchett, and I really dug this issue a lot. I think I like this better than the first few. Just because I like learning a little bit more about the mythology of the Maze.
Okay. You're talking about like the two brothers, like one who becomes a pig.
Yeah, I really like that.
Yeah.
And
okay.
You see both of them, right? Because the other brother, you see his dead skeleton, still with hair, apparently, in the maze. But the one brother has kind of like bonded with this pig that he had, and they've become one being. So he's a giant pig man.
Well, he stole the pig, right?
Yeah.
Because he had everything, but that was the one thing that his brother had that gave him joy, and so he stole it and absconded with it. But that made me question, I guess, like if people, you know, really do wander into the maze by happenstance or whatever, you know, like what isn't it understood that once you go in, you don't come out?
That'd be my assumption.
Like, that's what they say to Bonnie before she goes in, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like a test, like a mortal test.
Right.
So, I don't know. Maybe they're just dumb kids and they didn't think about it or whatever.
I mean, I don't know, dude. Like, kids do stupid stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, even if you tell them, don't go in this maze because you'll never come out, I'm sure there's still kids going in there. Or there might be like even adults, like fairy folk or whatever. They'd be like, well, I got to get to the other side. The fastest way is going to be to go through this maze. I mean, the only reason she's there is because Oberon wants her to like reveal her magic abilities.
Okay. Is it that?
That's what the witch says.
Yeah, it's like that was their premise for sending her in there. But my point being, in this issue, like some indications are that she's not magic. She's not the chosen one. You know, like, and like Oberon doesn't really seem bothered by that, and he swoops in to save her. Mm-hmm. You know, like, so I don't know, like the implication there, I think, being that maybe he put her in there knowing that he would have to save her to like maybe gain her trust, because really he's trying to use her as leverage against Titania.
Right. So is she Titania's kid, or is she both of their kid?
It was my assumption that like she was both of their kid.
Yeah.
But I don't think that that's been confirmed. It is confirmed that, you know, Titania has taken an interest for some reason, and she's like protecting her.
Well, not just taking an interest. I mean, the people that raised her as her parents work for Titania.
Yeah.
So she's always had an interest in this girl. I wonder if Mother May I knows more than she's letting on. Because even though she talks about, you know, maybe the girl's not magic, or maybe it was Oberon that said that about the girl not being magic, she tries to like kidnap her in the middle of the night, right? I mean, Oberon finds her and kind of blows up her spot a little bit, telling her who Mother May I actually is.
Godmother.
Yeah, the fairy godmother. But I wonder if she actually knows more than she's letting on.
Hmm.
Like, I don't know how magic works in this place. I'm not like huge into like fairy mythology or anything like that. So I don't know. But if this girl is Titania and Oberon's kid, like surely she has to be magical, right? She's the daughter of the king and queen of the fairies. If Titania's going through all these great extents to keep her hidden from the fairy world, there has to be a reason for that.
Yeah, I mean, from meta level, I figure whatever it is, you know, is going to end up being tied to the return of whatever it is, you know, like mm-hmm. the big scary baddie. I don't know as far as like the overall chosen one thing.
Mm.
Like, okay, like you were talking about Mother May I and kind of, you know, what she knows and, you know, why she would try to take Bonnie away.
Right.
My read on that was, like, it seemed like they were implying, because, like, I thought the implication was that essentially Cinderella was, you know, a girl like Bonnie, you know, like somebody that was protected, you know.
Yeah.
And that, like, you know, Mother May I got in trouble because she kind of like, she was like trying too hard for the kid to give her a good life and like made her royalty, you know, like gave her all this stuff. So like, you know, I interpret her actions here maybe as like an echo of that. Like she's taking sympathy on this kid who seems to be like in the crosshairs and like, you know, a bargaining chip for an unsavory dude who's like throws her into harm's way, you know, for, I don't know, nebulous reasons. Hmm. So like, I think that she could be genuine in just actually like having sympathy for the kid.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Let's do some final thoughts on this one.
Well, I guess that, you know, I'm kind of curious to your earlier point about, like, why they do this, like, Cloister Bonnie way. Like, it feels in a way kind of, like, vaguely similar to, like, the betrothed, like, premise, where you're like, oh, we're going to send you off and, like, try to keep you unaware of this thing, you know, for your protection or whatever, you know. But, like, that clearly didn't prepare her for what she's seeing now. And there seemed to be a comment from her where she's like, oh, now that I was in danger, like, I like it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, like, my mother would never let me do something like this or whatever. Mm. So it's, I don't know, it's interesting whether or not that is a good thing. Like, Mother May I was like, you're discovering yourself, but I don't know. Like, if you're taking big risks, that also could be a problem.
Yeah. I'm really enjoying this a lot. I like the intrigue of Oberon. Because you really don't know, you know, a lot of times when you have this kind of central character, they're made the narrator, and he is in parts of this book, but not in the entire thing. But I like how unreliable he is, because he appears trustworthy, but then you know he's not, right? But like, you can't really place why it is that he's not trustworthy. You can just kind of tell. And I like that. I think that makes him for a really interesting character. And I'm curious to see how this whole thing with Mother May I plays out. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. One final quick thought. Okay.
Yep.
Titania is like, I'm going to send somebody to help. And it's like a mischievous type.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So is that going to be Puck?
Well, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Is he going to be short?
He has to
be. It'd be like 3'5".
Oh, it could be like in the Avengers movie where the dwarves are gigantic.
Ah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. That's, we'll Ragnarok. See. Was it Ragnarok?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure, why not? All those movies are the same.
Oh, wait, no, you're right. You're right. I'm wrong. You're right.
It was Endgame, right? Not Endgame. Whatever the last one was.
It's, yeah, Infinity War, because they're doing War. They're making Stormbreaker.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Got it.
Yeah, Puck. I'm sure it'll be Puck. All right, I'm going to rate it up and say 4 out of 5.
Yeah, 4 out of 5 sounds good.
Fantastic. Dead Kings, number 4. This is Steve Orlando on writing duties, Matthew Dow Smith on art, Lauren Affey on colors, and Tom Maurer on letters.
You want me to start?
Sure, go for it.
Okay, so I feel like this one also kind of has a bombshell ending, right? Like,
for sure.
Elephant in the room. Like, is Sasha dead? He dead, right?
I mean, he's got to be. He blew up the bomb in his testicles.
Yeah, so he got shot in the balls? Is that why it exploded?
I was trying to figure that out myself. I think that's what happened, because you have that one panel where there's, like, smoke coming out of his ball sack. If you haven't read this comic, by the way, you need to just go look at this panel to know what we're talking about. And if you haven't read this comic, then shame on you.
It's not X-rated. Don't worry.
It's not X-rated. He's got pants on. There's just smoke coming out from the zipper. So yeah, that's my assumption. He got shot in the balls, and that's why the bomb blew up.
Yeah. So taken at face value, that's a pretty big surprise, right?
Yes.
And it seems like really, you know, they're almost maybe setting up that his twin brother swoops in as like, oh, I'm actually like the hero who's gonna, you know, rally the masses and you know, save Roose.
Yes, but do you think he'll do that as Sasha or as Genna? Like, will he say, oh, I'm Sasha, right? The liberator of this camp or whatever. Because he was already doing they already had an uprising there, right? Like, he had beat up the guards and taken their guns, and there were a bunch of dudes, like, running around fighting when Sasha and Mary showed up.
Yeah, no, I think he stays himself, to your point. He was already, you know, launching an escape attempt before they showed up, you know? So I don't know. He's clearly, he can motivate people to fight, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's got Stone Mary at his back. So, like, you know, she's valuable, certainly, kind of as a symbol, you know, even if, like, I know it seems like they're setting up that, you know, she can't really do a lot of the fighting, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think she's trying to ride off into the sunset or, you know, die in battle.
Yeah, I think she's trying to die in battle. I mean, think about the situation she puts herself in, right? Like, when Sasha leaves, she stays behind to fight those guys. And they, like, start kicking her ass. She's just urging him on. I mean, surely at some point they could have just gone after Sasha, right? Even though he was in the war habit, they could have gone after him. But she's just kind of an old soldier, and that's probably all she's ever known, right? Is this whatever war that they had before the events of this book started.
Yeah, I mean, she's obviously the bigger target between the two of them because, mm-hmm. you know, like, they know how much damage she can do.
Right.
Like, this other guy is a nobody, you know, who's like, you know, he's got no cred. And also, she just gave up, you know, her painkillers or whatever. Mm-hmm. So now she's, like, living with chronic pain. So, like, I could understand if, like, if every, you know, second of every day is pain, like, you might want to, like, go out in a blaze of glory.
Yeah, possible. And, I mean, she could have already been dying. I mean, we don't really know anything about her.
Yeah, I mean, we know that she had, like, those pain-killing nanites in her blood or whatever, and that was, like, propping her up or whatever.
Yeah, but my assumption was that those were implanted during the war, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's anything in particular. Yeah, it just the fact that she decided to help Sasha is still kind of a mystery to me as to why that is. I mean, obviously she's got some kind of vendetta against these people that she wants to get some sort of revenge. But I also wonder if it's just like if she just wants to relive her glory days, right? Like one last hurrah before she's gone. She's not that old, right? I mean, I would say she's maybe in her 50s.
Yeah. I mean, did they make reference to the idea maybe that, like, I feel like she made a comment about, like, kind of, like, old soldiers, right? Or whatever, old warriors. Like, you never outgrow that or whatever. So you're like, what's the point of me? Like if I've lived my whole life just to, like, be a weapon and then I don't do that anymore.
Right.
It's connected to a sentiment that I thought was really interesting, which was the idea that, like, sides are for generals.
Yeah.
And so, like, the grunts or whatever, like, you know, they don't care about sides.
Yeah, they just kind of do what they're told. I don't know how necessarily true that is. I mean, there's stories of, like, Japanese soldiers in World War II that get stranded on, like, you know, one of the islands offshore. And when they find them in, like, the 80s or the 90s, like, they still think the war's going on, you know, like, 30 years later. Because they haven't seen anybody. They just know that they had a mission to accomplish. And that's kind of how I see Mary. And even some of the other people. Like, there was a character in this particular issue, but we had the conductor. I don't know if it was last issue or two issues ago. They're all kind of the same type of personality, right? Like, all they knew was the war. And we really don't know anything about the war other than that it's over. And that people don't use technology anymore. But all they knew was the war. And when the war was over, like, they don't really know what to do with themselves. So in a way, they keep fighting the war any way that they can.
Yeah. I mean, certainly the lady who they, you know, put to sleep in this issue, like, on some level, she's still fighting the war, you know? Yeah. Like, I don't know if the Aparechniki or whatever... if they're still fighting the war per se, or like, it seems like they really, I don't know, they're fighting, but they're fighting for their own gain. So I don't know, like, I don't know if they're still fighting the war per se.
Mm. Yeah. I don't know. And I don't think that's explicitly stated either. So, that'd be an assumption, but, yeah. So it's a good issue, really good issue. I almost feel like I would want, you know how Animosity's got that, like, the secondary book that's over now, but had the secondary book. I almost feel like Dead Kings deserves more side stories or even, like, expanded issues to talk about the world. Because I don't think 22 pages is enough to pack in everything that Steve Orlando's got in his head as to how this whole thing works.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, It's a big premise, and there's a lot of, you know, historical references.
Yeah.
So finding space for it all is difficult.
Yep. And I don't know how long this series is. I want to say it's 6 issues, but I can't recall. I think that's probably going to be plenty of time to wrap up this story. All right, let's do final thoughts.
Okay, dude, my final thought is Sasha's, like, rolling around in a flying mortar, right?
Yes.
so that's like a Baba Yaga reference.
That's right.
I thought that's pretty cool, right?
Yeah, Yeah, I dug that. I was I got a little lost at first because I saw the little Iron Man suit, and then I saw the little teacup flying behind them, and I was like, "What the hell's happening right now?" But yeah, then they kind of showed it more at the end, so I caught wind of it a little bit more. Yeah, I really like that. I like that. I'm curious, like, how Sasha knew how to fly the war habit.
Oh, I love that too, dude. Like, it made me think of there's like a sketch comedy bit by Mitchell and Webb. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Nope.
Or I don't. Maybe it's not Mitchell and Webb. Maybe it's Birthday Boys. Anyway, there's a sketch where it's all about like some guy invented a rocket pack.
Huh.
And like there's all these videos of people like using a rocket pack and they just all crash into shit and die. Because like turns out, I don't know, like Iron Man makes it work because he's got the, you know, like stabilizing jets.
Sure.
But if you don't have that, like how are you going to land or stop?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, Sasha even talks about like not knowing how to land a thing, but he seems to be doing pretty good. So I don't know.
Yeah, maybe it's intuitive, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
Or maybe that's just what they fly in Russia, you know? Like, doing the grocery shopping, take out the mortar. Don't forget to fill it up.
Oh, man. All right, let's rate this one up. What you got?
I'll go 4 out of 5 again.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go 4.25. I really like this book quite a bit. You know, this book's really different from a lot of the Aftershock line. And I know Aftershock does a really good job at making every book feel unique and different. Even through that that dark joke at C2E2, right? Where they're going to rename everything Dark something. But they do a really good job of making every book unique. And I think even through all that, this book is really unique. And very different from even stuff that Orlando's done elsewhere. I mean, similar themes. I don't know if you've read... Oh God, what was that? Crude, from Image. It's also set in Russia. Cause I think Orlando was a Russian major in college. And, so he's very steeped in Russian culture. And, even through that, it's very different. And I like it. Post-apocalyptic. And I love that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
I'm very curious for, you know, people who are really well versed in Russian culture and history, like whether this stuff really resonates. Like I feel like that's like a very prominent thing, but I don't know personally what to make of it because, you know, like some of the references here are lost on me, you know?
Yeah. Yep. I hear you. All right. That's all the books for the week. Next week, there's only one and it's a brand new one. It is Orphan Age number 1 from Ted Anderson and Nuno Plotty. Ted's really excited about this book, so I'm excited for it.
It sounds good, dude. It was fun listening to him talk about it.
Yeah, for sure. It reminds me of did I mention this? Yeah, the Jericho show. Did we talk about that last time? Or was that like at the Airbnb?
Can't say.
I have a vague recollection of talking about Jericho. Yeah, you were there because it was Luke Perry and Michael Jamal Warner.
Yeah.
Anyways, the premise is very similar to that. But I love that show, so this will be good. Anyways, that's it. You can find us on Twitter. Ronnie is at Rumbar316. Travis is at The Great Magnet. I'm a Geekvine, and the show is at Aftershock Pod. Thank you all for listening, and we'll catch you on the next episode.